Members, good morning and welcome to this fourth quarterly report meeting with the Department of Education. And may I send a special welcome to my co-chairperson here, Honorable Malchas, and the colleagues from the Portfolio Committee of Education. It's always enriching to have you around. You know, thank you very much for coming. And sometimes we know we give short notice, but thank you very much for being with us. May we also take this opportunity to welcome the department. The Director General is here himself. Thank you very much, TG, for coming. We know that it's time for Kuta. Am I right? Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much for coming. We hope that we don't intend to keep you here for long. We would like to be business-like. The honorable members tell me that they know the vision and mission of the department. They don't wish to hear them today. I hope that doesn't disorganize you and your presentation. But the reason for inviting you, DG, is that you have spent. However, there are gaps in the spending. We just got some little gaps in the spending that we would like you to assist us with. Yes. The department, I think 2011-2012, did not spend the whole budget. And a lot of the amount is outstanding, it's not spent. Obviously, when education is underspending, it's a bit worrying because when we think that the budget itself is not sufficient and there is underspending, we get worried because of the central role that the department plays in bettering the lives of our people in the country, but also the fact that government has made it a priority, has made education priority number one. But if there are challenges, we would like to understand the challenges and say what is it that as Parliament perhaps we could do to assist. We have not invited you here just to criticize you, but to say together how can we resolve some of those challenges. If there are blockages, what can we do on our side to unblock those blockages. So, with those few remarks, but that's the areas that maybe, Fiji, if our presentation could just try to focus there so that we, not that you might not present some of the issues you would like to present, you're welcome to do so. But honourable members, also from our side, we would just like to try to maybe focus around the issues of understanding. We know that we're going to have the department very soon for the annual report. They will be presenting very soon the annual report, and so many issues will be presented there. But we do understand that the fourth quarterly report is close to that. We will not constrain honorable members in terms of raising issues that they would like to raise, but we would really like to be kind of focused, because we invited the department to present on certain things. Sometimes I just wish that we don't take them too much outside to what we invited, but I don't want us to ambush them. I know that they would have the answers already available. On that note, I don't know if my co-chairperson would like to have some remarks before we allow then the department to present.
Not really remarks. I just want to thank you for inviting us and the committee itself. And there's nothing that I would like to say, you know, further. Because I'm chairing basic education, it's not my duty to oversight them in this meeting. So my hand is over to you, Chair. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I said something, you know, but I left it hanging, because I said there are areas that we would like the department to focus on. We have been to the province of Eastern Cape, I think 3 times this year, and trying to assist in terms of ensuring that there was spending in that area. But we are aware now that there is improvement, but maybe in terms of the fourth quarter report, at the time of the fourth quarter report, I think only about 18% was spent. There's also also another infrastructure grant that was not transferred to Eastern Cape, which also is a cause for concern, because the reasons for having those resources being deployed is to ensure that there is improvement of infrastructure in the area. Karigude, I hope that I'm or Harigude, I hope that I'm pronouncing it correctly. There's underspending in that area. In fact, I mean, the total spending is 1.2 billion. I think that is a challenge. But let me invite you, Dichi, and the team to present. Over to yourself.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of both the Standing Committee on Appropriations and the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. We welcome this opportunity to come and present before you our expenditure figures for the last quarter of the previous financial year, 2011-2012. And in doing so, we've tried to stick very much to the letter we received, dated 24 August 2012, in which the overall objectives were clearly outlined and specific questions were posed in relation to numbers. So, Honourable Chairperson, we're not going to go into the vision, etc. We're going to get very much into budget and expenditure figures. We are going to focus specifically on areas where there's a variance in expenditure, either over or under expenditure. We believe that's the purpose of this meeting, this hearing. And then finally, we're going to try and explain what is a variation between our figures and the figures we received in the letter from the Appropriations Committee.
Okay.
Because we tried to work very hard to try and assess why is it that our figures differ. We are working, though, to audited financial statements, so we will default to those. But it's taken a lot of time for us really to understand why these figures that we got in the letter are at such variance with our own figures. But with that and with your permission, Honorable Chairperson, if I could hand over to our CFO on my left, Mr. Nsetsa Molekwa, please.
But just before you do that, if you could just spend 1 minute to tell us who is accompanying you.
Sorry, thank you very much.
And welcome the whip of the education.
The moment I thought the whip is part of my delegation, I could recognize. I've got Ms. Gugu Ndebele, who's the DDG, responsible for enrichment and health in our department. I have introduced the CFO. To my right is Mr. Fedi Fadiachi, DDG, responsible for planning information systems in the department. Next to him is Anton Skuman, DDG for administration. Next to him is Ms. Gladys Modise. She's the director responsible for monitoring provincial budgets. So whereas our CFO deals with the corporate budget, she deals with the sector and monitors provincial budgeting and expenditure throughout the year.
So if there's no spending in the province?
Yes, the point is she's the messenger. She tells us what the culprits are doing. Next to her is Mr. Mweli, who is acting DDG in our curriculum branch. And I can't see the person next to him. Okay, so talk about him.
No, don't introduce everyone.
And just behind is Ms. Kele Moevi, who is in the DG's office in Cape Town. That's all from the department.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. The presentation starts by indicating the allocation that we had in the financial year 2011-12, and the department had an allocation of 14.080 million, which is 14 billion. And 11,218 million of the budget is the transfer payments. Now, these transfer payments are divided into conditional grants, transfers to public entities, and other transfers, and the amounts are indicated on the slide. And the remainder of the budget, which is 2.862 billion, is made up of compensation of employees, examiners and moderators, earmarked funds, specifically and exclusively appropriated. Now, this one is the backlog grant. And then departmental operations have 235 million, and departmental projects are allocated 105 million. Now, the total expenditure of the department at the end of the quarter, fourth quarter 2011-12, amounts to 12.9 billion. And 10 billion of the expenditure is transfer payments. Which are conditional grants, 10 billion, transfers to public entities, 467 million, and other transfers, 12.9 million. The remainder of the expenditure, which is 2 billion, is compensation of employees, 232 million, examiners and moderators, 10 million, earmarked funds, 1.445 billion, departmental operations, 233 projects, 64 million, school infrastructure backlog grant, 76 million. Now this slide is just showing the allocation, the adjusted appropriation and actual expenditure, and those are the percentages that were spent per program. Now on this one is the expenditure shown in economic classification, and one of the items that is showing low expenditure is payment of capital assets, and this one we'll see in the following slide. This one is showing the economic classification further, just showing conditional grants, transfers and subsidies, and projects. On this one is the one that is spent less, and then school infrastructure backlog grant 10.8%. Those are the two items that spent less on the slide. This one is showing the different allocations for earmarked funds, conditional grants, and so on. Now, Karugude was mentioned as one of the items that are underspending. That is correct. The underspending there was about 44 million. And the reason for underspending on Karugude was due to the change in the procurement model. What used to happen was because this program was outsourced to a service provider, the service provider used to procure learner support materials on behalf of the department. But because of the concerns that were raised by the Auditor General, the department had to start procuring. But it was already late in the financial year when the process was started. This process was completed, but it could only be completed at the beginning of the current financial year. And then the other item is the curriculum review with a variance of 30 million. Now this one was the development of the CAPS document, development, printing and distribution, and training of educators. This was done for grades 1, 2, 3, and 10, and the documents were distributed. However, we received the invoices late in the financial year. We received the invoices amounting to about 11 million that were received in the last week of the financial year, and those could not be processed. And the remainder of the money was supposed to be used for the next grade, but the process only started in the current financial year. And then the workbooks, we received the invoice of about 11 million as well. That one was delayed because the external auditors had to audit that all the delivery took place according to the requirements. Now, that one was also paid late. It was only paid in the current financial year, but we did receive the invoice. Annual national assessment at 14 million. This one was due to the ANAC test being shifted from February to September. So although the processes started, they started because the program was shifted to later in the financial year, the processes started late as well. Technical schools recapitalization. There it was just underspending, or the conditional grants in general, it was just underspending on the grants. The EIG, the withholding was for, we withheld transfers to the Eastern Cape. The fourth transfer and the amount for the disaster relief was withheld. The reason for that was the amount that had already been transferred to the Eastern Cape, there was no spending on that item. So we did not transfer the fourth transfer. The last transfer, sorry.
Which program are you referring to there?
The education infrastructure grant.
Wow, okay. Mm.
The one that shows 423.
Mm. Okay.
And then this slide is just showing transfers to public entities and other transfers. The understanding there was not significant. And then the following slides are just explaining what I just explained earlier, Chairperson, so I don't think I have...
Sure.
Okay. Maybe if I can just add on program three. There was under expenditure on IQMS, and this was because of compensation of employees on the project. There were challenges of some of the moderators resigned, so we have to go through the process of filling the positions for with new people. So that takes some time, and it leads to under expenditure. And then the following program four, I've talked about EIG and backlog grant, but there was also under expenditure on NIDU. The evaluators were appointed during the latter part of the financial year, and the delays in the appointment resulted in the under expenditure on compensation of employees on this project. And then on program five, there was no material variance in this program. Thank you, Chair.
That's long enough. Thank you very much. Five. Six. Thank you. Anything you want to add, teacher?
Yes. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Let me just indicate that in the infrastructure underspending clearly is a big issue, and we have presented on that matter on a few occasions here, although we can go into that again. On the other matters, you know, like Kariguri, it was about the AG's intervention on procedure. With the workbooks one, the underspending there, let me indicate that at a early stage in the process of the workbooks project, we projected a saving because we'd managed to reduce the price so much. We got agreement from Treasury to use that balance. We then had to work on development of further workbooks to cover additional number of grades. And that then needed to be distributed. So that pushed the time frames up. It was distributed, just that you don't pay on invoice. You pay on verification of invoice. And then the process of verifying whether the books were actually delivered to schools is what caused that delay to allow us to pay. So I just thought I'd clarify that process. It started off because of a saving.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Tichi. Honored members, there you are. Can I see hands who would like to engage? Okay, Honorable Swart, Honorable Dr. Van Eyck, Honorable Singh, Honorable Skotan. Oh, sorry, Honorable Swart. Can I start?
Yeah, sure.
With my I'll declare very soon. It's Honorable Fuller.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to know the turnaround time. Because for me, it's like you only realize at the end, when it's time for payment, that there are some challenges. That's what I can see here, but I don't say it's like that. So I just want to know, when do you realize there's a challenge or there's a problem within the department in terms of payment? Because it's not clear. It's only at the end of the year or when you're supposed to be paying. Mm-hmm. And my other question is to say, when you say invoices came late, that's exactly where I'm going back again and to say, you need to be, in my own understanding in business, you need to be telling the person that on this date, this is the date of payment. If your invoice is late, just we forget about it. So that people can be in time. At this moment, you keep on saying invoices were late. Whose problem is it? You must make sure that the system makes sure that the things are in time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, comrades. On our side.
Thank you. You know, we listen to all the reasons why there's underspending, but, you know, the total underspending by this department is, this department's got a huge budget, and the total underspending is $1.2 billion. You know, that's a lot of money. You know what we can do with that kind of thing, and it's been, you know, it's in the budget, and, you know, it's just, we just glibly pass by that this money has not been spent, and we advance various reasons for it, but in any case, that's just a remark that I want to make. You know, and then we learn of problems like, you know, school books not being delivered, and the schools, you know, the infrastructure grants not being used, And these are the things that worries me about this department. You know, it's just not good. It's just not good enough. There's a lack of planning and there's a lack of management to make sure that, you know, that we spend the money that we've advanced. Something which in particular worries me is the technical schools, the secondary recapitalization grant, which was only 72% spent. Because we need skills in this country, and we need skills development, and these technical schools are absolutely important, you know, for development of those skills, so that our people can get jobs because they have the skills to do that. But, you know, we seem to be just sort of carrying on, and, you know, every year we get this one back, you know, underspent, and every year we have the same excuse as to why it's not being spent. So, you know, that really concerns me. I've got so many questions about this department, but, you know, I'll just stick to that one. Thank you. For.
Now, raise your questions on our soft. That's raised 500 of them. Okay. Honorable Dr. Pandey.
Chairperson, thank you. Zahir will put those questions on paper and maybe it can be answered later. I've also got a lot of questions, but due to time constraints, I do agree with my colleague, you know, that we concentrate on basics. Chairperson, I just want to make two comments first before I ask a question. It was said to the committee that due to certain invoices, the expenditure would have been much higher if the invoices were received earlier, processed, etc., etc. But, you know, this is a thing, Chair, and you will remember when we were on finance a couple of years ago, the department and all departments and government and treasury actually introduced the basis of accounting to change from the cash basis to the accrual basis. And it was promised to us that it would have been implemented already a couple of years ago. And I think it will just be to the advantage of all departments, even your department. The sooner you can switch to the accrual basis of accounting instead of the cash basis of accounting, what it will mean is that it will not be on your books once the invoice has been processed, but once the service has been delivered. So irrespective of when you receive your invoices for the services and delivering of goods and services, once you render the service, it would be on your books as an expenditure. And you need to come and explain to us all these rollovers or invoices that will be paid into the new financial year, etc., etc. There were even departments, not your department, other departments, a couple of years ago, who overspent in the previous year. They keep quiet about the invoices, and then more than 400 million of invoices were paid within the new financial budget to cover old expenses. And the other way around, like you keep the money to pay it in the next year already, but although the services were rendered in the previous financial year. But, Chairperson, and I think this is a message that we must give to all the other departments as well, and you will remember I asked this question to Treasury a short while ago when they came to address us as well about this, you know, the basis of how they do their accounting. So the sooner you switch from the cash basis of accounting to the accrual basis of accounting, the better. Chairperson, then another thing I would like to add also, and it's already been referred to by my colleague, the unspent money, the money that you do not spend, it is not, you know, you can't see that actually as a saving. There are savings, I see in your presentation. If there are real savings, it's fine, it's good, because you didn't know that in advance, you budget for something, and at the end of the day, it turns out to be that there is a small saving. But in general, money that's not been spent cannot be seen as a saving, or money that can go back to the fiscus. Because in the meanwhile, from the time that you budget for this money, it is money that's been taken out of the economy, and through the economic multiplier, you know, it is not good for the economy, for job creation. It is money that would have been otherwise be in the pocket still of companies, individuals, and those people who pay taxes to make money available for government, that could have been plowed back into the economy to generate the economic growth. So I want to bring that to your attention, and the reason why I'm saying this, Jay, is that the budget process is not actually in February with the announcement of the appropriation law. It starts already 3 years before that, when we start with the MTEF, and the finalization of any budget happens already in the middle of the previous year. And at that stage, if there is a short on, if the budget will be short, that we haven't got all the income, already at that stage, plans will also be made about increases in taxes, etc., where government will get that money from. So I'm just saying that, you know, once we budget for a certain amount, we have to spend, not waste, not fruitless or wasteful expenditure. You have to spend your money on what's been budgeted for productive spending. Chairperson, then my question is just taking into consideration the grants. It's been said there was very low spending on the projects due to capacity problems. Now, it is, you know, we can put the ball from the one court to the other court with transfers and subsidies to provinces and lower tiers of government. We can put the blame on them and they can put the blame on national, etc. It's a playing game. But I would just like to know, Chair, what is your communication, what is your involvement to see and to make sure that this trend will not carry on, that we won't experience that in the future as well. They already know that they're going to receive this transfer. If there's low spending on that side, what is your interference and what measures do you have in place to make sure that this will not be a recurrent trend and will not happen again in the future? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chairpersons. Chairperson, just on the presentation, thank you for the presentation, by the way. There's just one area which I noticed has not been mentioned yet, and that's application for rollovers.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no mention of any rollovers and whether you've made application for rollovers to Treasury and have you received any response. But, Chair, I just want to follow on the other colleagues. It's serious cause for concern that, you know, an amount of 1.2 billion rand has been unspent in a very, very critical area which will contribute to the development of our community and our nation. The other day, just for the benefit of your members, Chairperson, we had National Treasury doing a presentation to us on underspending, and they said, no, well, this is a small amount, it's only 1%. It was a certain department. Well, let me say to the police department.
Mm.
And then Honorable Yengeni,
she's not
here today. She said, you know, whether it's 1% or 0.5%, if you go to Khayelitsha and tell the people there that 500 million rand was unspent by this department,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have police stations there,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the kinds of questions that we, as public representatives, have to answer, not how many percent and what have you. And Chairperson, you know, I think as oversight committees, departments have to understand that when we ask them questions, we ask them because it's our responsibility. You know, in the last 6 months or a year, it's the HRC, it's a public protector, it's Section 29 or whatever organization that are asking the hard questions. And we seem to be like lame ducks here in the greatest powerhouse in the country, not asking searching questions. So when we ask these questions, we hope that you take it in that spirit. But just to follow on Honorable Van Dijk, I think what we'd like to know is there a problem of internal capacity in this department, or are there extraneous factors that are contributing to this underspending? And we want the department to be very open with us in that regard. That's my first question. I think with regard to the underspend of infrastructure, Honorable Van Dijk said, I mean, we have MTEFs, we have additional money. Are contractors taking us for a ride? Last year in the presentation, I think it was Mr. Padiachi who said to us that if you look at the costs of a unit, let's say a classroom unit, it differs from area to area and sometimes within areas. Why should that be? Is there a World Cup stadium kind of building of collusion between contractors? And if that is so, that's something that needs to be investigated. Because, you know, we can balance the books here. We can call education, you can say we spend all our money. I mean, the basic question is value for money.
Mm.
Are we getting value for money and have services been delivered to the people on the ground? So we'd just like to know that since we were told about these varying costs per unit, has anything been done in that regard? So that's all I'll ask about the infrastructure, Chair, because that's a major portion. But what I also like to ask is curriculum review. I see you've underspent how often is the curriculum reviewed? And my sense is that it's being reviewed so often that your books, you know, that you print this year are not relevant next year and maybe not relevant the year after. And that is why we don't get books printed on time. Because if you review curriculum once in 5 years, I know there's need for changing. You know, the dynamics of education cause us to change. But if we review our curriculum all the time, it means new books, new this, new that, new training to our teachers. So just like a sense of how often curricula are reviewed, so that because it relates to your spending on your books. My last question for now, Shay, is on conditional grants. Because a major portion of your spend is on conditional grants by provinces. What kind of monitoring and evaluation takes place in terms of how the provinces spend? And I see you've underspent by 367 million or so. Do you take back money from provinces? Do you withhold money from provinces? And how confident are you that those provinces are spending the money in the areas for which they are meant to be, ring-fenced areas, and that we are getting value for money at that level? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Singh. Honorable Kosana.
Chairperson, the presentation is understood. And what I want to say, this presentation, particularly on issues raised, they do have a potential for underspending. But what is fundamental is that the strategy to change the whole problem. Can we get a clear understanding on the strategy, as my colleague has indicated about the strategy? And also, particularly on the resignation of staff members, somebody to carry on with the duty to implement the program, unlike the program to start, which I think is very important. Like IQMS, if in the IQMS we've got only one member who's able to implement, when that particular person resigns, then it's a problem, which means we must have somebody who can assist and carry the program forward, but we'll hear from the department. But all in all, these issues that have been raised, they do have a potential for this underspending. But the strategy, the turnaround strategy, must assist of how to deal with them. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Rama.
No, thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
I just want to follow up on my colleagues. I've got just a few of the questions. Perhaps it's just
I mean, 10? Did you say
10?
No, I have few. I hate to mention the number. DG, just with respect to the 1.2 billion unspent, what do you think how do you quantify the impact of that non-expenditure to a South African child that was supposed to benefit from the 1.2 billion that was unspent? Just to speak to that, to that aspect, I just want to hear you speak on this and other officials. The what is the magnitude of the problem, and what is the accumulative impact and the magnitude of the lack of expenditure of this 1.2 billion that was allocated? In other words, if we were to take it away from you, would you feel any impact in the department that 1.2 billion has been taken away from you, you're not getting it? and in the following year. Now, I also just want to find out this. I mean, you in the third quarter, second quarter, managing the budget, the third quarter you can begin to see the trend of expenditure pattern. That tells you that by the time you come to the fourth quarter, you may not necessarily spend all the money because of number of reasons that you can craft. But linked to this question, I just want to find out if this question is not being asked. One of the reasons that we still have to get a detail of it, of the Limpopo material problem, that what was reported was that they ran out of cash. There was problem with cash towards the end of last year, and therefore they were unable to order this because they informed the National Department that they were running out of cash. And so they were pre-warned, they were warning about this. Now, I'm asking this question in relation to the 1.2 billion. If the one of the provinces that was running out of cash and there was you were in down with cash in Pretoria, were there no way to address this particular question with the cash that was already, you could see that the cash was there? Why could there not be intervention with the resource that was available in aiding that particular province in the challenges that they had? There's an issue about the workbooks issue, and the workbook issue, the under expenditure of it. Now, Chairperson, when we speak about it in this room, don't see the impact of it. It's a figure. In the scheme, in the big scheme of things, the department will say, why worry about 17 million when we handle the big, when we handle a budget of billions? So this is just a change, you know. But the impact of it into a child, either in a place called Khayelitsha, if you've been there, or in a place like Nkanduli, or in a place like Kukuni in Limpopo, do you imagine the impact of it, either negative or positive? But I'm asking negative impact. Like, you sit down really and look at it and say, but we are failing South African child that we want to achieve this if this is not being achieved by the department and all by the official. Then the let me ask the last one, Chair. In the interest of time, the school infrastructure backlog. I think there's a report, the presentation says there was money that was withheld because we could see there was a problem of underspending there that we were not going to be spent, so we held, I think, 623 million that was earmarked to do this. And of course, there were other interventions. Now, can you, in the context of what is happening in the Eastern Cape, including the Section 100, because the powers is now residing with you, sir, can you give us assurance that what we have been told with respect to the money that was voted for the intervention in the Eastern Cape particularly, there was a 50 school, there was 10 out of 49 schools, there's 50 more. Can you give assurance that we have been given some deadlines and time frames for the completion? So the first batch, I think, if I'm, my mind does not leave me alone, it's the 12th school was supposed to be somewhere in August, completion of it. Can you put our mind at ease, reassure us that that what we have said as a issue of the deadlines is going to be met, that which is the August and that which is November? I think the following deadline, the final deadline, was November. Can we get that the assurance from you? Chair, I will leave this here for now, but those two questions, depending on what we get from the DG. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. The work of appropriation and in the work of basic education.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the adjustment which we saw questioned and ultimately passed, I think I'm covered. I don't want to repeat because very little is spent there. Now, what worried me was when the presenter said, talking about underspending and mentioned the word insignificant underspending. I just want to understand at what level becomes underspending insignificant, because I think each and every cent that is being passed is significant because it has a purpose. And this NEDU, I don't know how you pronounce it, the reason for not for underspending there is very unacceptable, because here are the posts that need to be filled, and what we get here is that there was a late appointment, because these appointments were there and needed to be done. But the reason for not spending that money is late appointment. How and why were there late appointments at this stage? And the issue of books is being asked in different times, in different ways. But I'm not referring to Limpopo. I'm referring to what we should be aware of as appropriations. Are the books, will there be books at all the schools when the schools will open in January?
Yeah.
It's as simple as all that.
Mm.
And we have a department here which has a lot of clients within the government department, and that department is public works. And we know it has problems. But have you ever given them a chance of building one school and compare the cost of that school with all the cost of all the other schools which you've tried to build and have turned out to be very costly? Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Gina. Yes, I know we're going to look at you, but Honorable Gina now.
It's late. There's love more. There's no.
Yes, I know. Yes. Yes, I will. Honorable Gina, it's your chance.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I only have two questions for today. The first one, Chairperson, will be on. Okay, as a country, Chairperson, we know that when it comes to skills, we're running very short of, and specifically math and science, and it's one of the highlighted things that we have within the department to make sure that at least we do a little better on math and science. And Chairperson, I'm worried on the understanding on Dinaledi schools as we see it reflecting here. And yes, the reason might be the problems that have been there in Limpopo, but my question will be, having had those challenges in Limpopo, I'm not going to the catch-up program, no, I'm not there, but what I'm saying is we have underspent in Limpopo, Western Dinaledi schools. What are the processes in place? Because really, that's one area where we need to be very careful and make sure that we give necessary support to those learners out there. With the money that has been unspent, what is it that we are doing to make sure that we cover up, and how best can we even resource those schools to make sure that come December, come January, we get the better results when it comes to math and science? And also, No, I don't want us to go in and evaluate the impact of these schools, but it's fine. I'm just concerned with what is happening in Limpopo right now when it comes to math and science. Is there any additional assistance that we'll be seeing, or more resources that will be going to these denuded schools to make sure that we improve the results? The last one, Chairperson, is on Karikud program. Yes, I do read the reason for underspending there. But my question will be, before the AG and the National Treasury came up with some of the challenges when the production of books or the material was done by the service provider, as a department, is there anything that you have seen as being wrong, and what are the challenges now as we have taken that function and is being done in-house within the department? Are we going to see even more cuts on the budget? If so, how much can it be, and how best can even save in other departments and in future when it comes to this Karikud material that has been produced in-house now compared to what has been done when the service provider was there? And how long has this thing have taken up until the Auditor General could highlight us to say there are challenges when we brought it in-house? Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honourable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to piggyback on the various questions about LTSM, the textbooks particularly. I know that it's not necessarily fourth quarter expenditure, but it's an extension and a chance to ask the questions. Yeah, we certainly don't want to see a Limpopo again. Now, I am getting information, and I'm sure that the officials in the department are also getting information, or have information, that in various provinces, the expenditure on compensation of employees is so high that there's not terribly much money left for much else. And allocation for textbooks is suffering. The department must have been alerted, and let me mention specifically in this particular case, the Eastern Cape and KZN, must have been alerted that there are problems with respect to orders for next year and money available for next year. So there was a question asked, what does the province, what does National do to intervene? Is it doing anything? Can it do anything with respect to budget, particularly for textbooks for next year? The fact is that the National Department has a target of 85% of children having, I mean, personally I think it's far too low, but nevertheless, 85% of children having a textbook for every subject currently, 2012-2013 financial year. So the National Department must have a way of ensuring that that target is achieved, even though that target is actually left to the provinces to achieve. So that would be rather interesting to have comment on. And then, Chairperson, I just wanted some clarity on those. Perhaps it's here, perhaps I'm not seeing it. Those aspects, I'm starting at slide 10 here, where it starts with reasons for deviation per program. In some cases, it's very easy to pick up because they are grants, conditional grants and specific allocations like for Karikud, for instance. But in other cases, it's not so easy to pick up. Like Honourable Gina's mention of the Dilaledi schools, it says that there was under expenditure there, but nowhere does it say how much that was. Was it the entire amount? I've got no idea. Program 3, there was 43 million underspent on Program 3 due to resignation of external moderators and invoices in respect of training educators received late. A lot of 43 million is a lot of money for what sounds like it shouldn't actually cost that. I mean, how many moderators, was it a mass exodus? What happened? The 43 million. And then there's some things where we don't have specific figures. How do we get specific figures? My last question is a simple one, and I'm sure you'll be able to. I should know the answer, but I don't. In cases like with your conditional grants, like the education infrastructure grant to the Eastern Cape, where you say there was no spending, so you withhold the last tranche. Then what? Then the Eastern Cape, which is so desperately in need of funds to do something about its infrastructure, hasn't got any money to spend at all. Do you take over the spending, or do you just withhold the money and say, well, then there's nothing for you, and sorry for you? Thank you, Chair.
Fine, thanks a lot. And I think on the last wall, you should have just referred to page 8, ne? Because I had all the under-expenditure there. Because you were looking, yeah. So I thought that. Honorable Panchana, and then it's Honorable Swati.
I must say, chairpersons, as members of the basic cultural education, we are not only waking up to some of these issues of underspending. They've been brought to us. We've been aware of some of these issues, and we've interrogated the department on some of these. But my question, Chairperson, on the basis of Intergovernmental Relations Act, because I regard this committee, the appropriation, do you call yourself appropriation committee?
No, we don't call
it's a very important it's a very important committee which could even give warning lights on some of these underspending issues before, in fact, they get out of hand. My question, sir, is there any way where your committee or the chairperson of the Appropriation Committee and the chairperson of Basic Education could meet occasionally to flag out some of these issues early enough so that we on the basic education portfolio can integrate or question the Department of Basic Education before it is too late. That's my question basically. Is it relevant?
Don't worry about relevance.
No question is irrelevant.
Thanks a lot. And I think what is important with your question, that's why I said yesterday in our meeting, there are controls in place within, internal controls within the department. And the department has to come now to us to tell us what is going to happen the end of the next financial year, because you've got the in-year monitoring. But you are correct, we can meet. Honorable Grant, now, sorry.
Thanks, Chair. Sometimes I think you're getting drowned in a heap of questions, and sometimes it's hard to have follow-ups. But with Section 100, I assume it has got a cost attached to yourselves. This 1.2 billion under expenditure, how much more would it be if you didn't have Section 100? Or how much has Section 100 cost you that you clearly wouldn't have budgeted for in this financial year? And where would that Section 100 money come from, in what program? Okay. Then, with regards to the provinces, we're saying that, for example, the Eastern Cape didn't have the capacity to spend the last section of the transfer. Then that raises another question in my mind. With Section 100, what role are you playing in respect to the powers of controlling a budget? is the accounting officer still the accounting officer under Section 100, or have you got the responsibility to ensure that that money is spent? So is it the departments that are under Section 100 that are failing, or is it yourselves that are failing? Okay. And how do you think that can be sorted out? And then the next batch of schools that are supposed to be delivered in the Eastern Cape in particular, have those gone out for tender yet? And do we foresee then that we might have another large under-expenditure next year if those schools haven't gone out? And rather let us know up front, because as the Honourable Malchus was saying, last year, I think it was in October or so, we were still convinced that money would be spent based on what you were told by the Development Bank. So where are we now with that? Mm-hmm. Thanks.
But, you know, just following on what Honourable Snell asked, you know, we're in September now, and the 49 schools that were supposed to be built in the Eastern Cape, of those 12 have to be delivered at the end of August. And I want to know whether they, in fact, were delivered at the end of August, and I would like confirmation from the department that the balance of the schools will be delivered at the end of November as they've undertaken to do so.
Thanks a lot for that. And I'll just add on something small. Your school nutrition program, because to us it's, we use it for retention of learners. It was underspent by 73 million. And I think the department has to speak to that. And I think the questions were very interesting that came from our members. And members are correct, because I question myself too. What are we doing here if we're not asking the hard questions? That means we can stay at home. Why should we allow, the courts to tell the department how to do their core function? And I agree with you as appropriation. I'm handing over to our DG of Education. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members.
Just hold on, DG.
That's a small addition as well, did you? You know, Honorable Ramatagana, I think an Honorable Kinare asked about the impact of the understanding. I'm sure all of us, we saw one day on TV school children from the rural areas around Delmas. So they don't have transport to go to school. Apparently they've spent about 2 months, I don't know. Is it 2 months? They haven't been to school is it 3 months? But sometimes they're there, they get leaves and get exposed to all kinds of what you call it, things, you know, when they go to school. But I'm also, I know that in the previous year, Honorable Mashego, it's something that we had always wanted to find a solution. I hope now there's a solution. Whether the issue of transport, of transportation of kids, does it lie with the department? Does it lie with the Department of Transport? And whose responsibility is that? You know, I'm just raising that because colleagues are raising the issue of the impact of the impact of the understanding. Honorable Ramatagan, you're asking about the impact. You're talking 1 billion. There's 11 other billion that has been underspent on 2011, 2012. 11 billion, including this 1 billion. I mean, it's a budget of a department, or it's more than a budget of a department. So I think that the issue that maybe Honorable Mponshane could be asking is just between the two portfolio committees. I think there's a lot, Honorable Mponshane, that we need to do in terms of collaborating and and cooperating with other committees in order to ensure that we can contribute towards reducing this under expenditure, because the need out there is really overwhelming, you know. Tichi?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairpersons and Honorable Members. I'm going to answer the questions again in the order in which they were asked, and then I'll ask specific colleagues, given the technical information required, to respond to specific questions. On the first question around turnaround time and when do we realize that these problems occur in relation to invoices, let me say that the workbooks invoice wasn't a problem of planning from the beginning. Once the tender was out and once it was completed, we realized that we'd be spending less than the budget. And when the Treasury then approves, you start the second process of planning. And that is why your time frames get moved. So the realization wasn't in relation to the original invoices. It was in relation to the subsequent ones. Now, the point, I think, about moving away from a cash basis to an accrual basis of accounting does help in that process a lot. Mm. And I think that's something that throughout government has been a point to talk about, to deal with. And we have been working very hard to ensure that invoices are solicited on time, processed within the norm of government of 30 days. I'm still not happy with the overall record in the department, and we have sent out directives to officials who sit with invoices on their desk by not giving specific information across the line. So we're getting there as far as the invoices are concerned. Honorable Swartz, 1.2 billion is a lot of money. And other honorable members asked about the impact of that. So let me speak about the impact of that and put it into perspective. 1.2 billion in relation to total education expenditure may appear to be small, but it is 1.2 billion, which is a lot of money, firstly. Secondly, the bulk of education expenditure goes into personnel expenditure, which is 85%. And we've got very little money left to do everything else, to buy books, to buy chalk, to fix windows, to buy resources for the schools. And 1.2 billion goes a long, long way. So the impact on education alone, on schooling, is enormous if you're not spending 1.2 billion. The opportunity cost of 1.2 billion. It goes further, though, staying within education. We're currently not succeeding in inclusive education, to put it mildly. We've not been succeeding in inclusive education for years since democracy started. And the singular reason for that is not the absence of policy. It's because of the absence of adequate financial resources. That's the reason. 1.2 billion can go a long way in addressing the dire needs there in inclusive education for special schools, full-service schools, or mainstream schools. We've introduced grade R to improve quality in the system. But a poor quality grade R does not improve quality in the system, and a quality grade R depends on quality teachers. If you don't have the money to pay the teachers, which is the situation currently, we don't pay them what we pay other teachers. You have a problem. 1.2 billion can go a long way in that. It can alleviate things like transport. So the impact on the education system, the opportunity cost, is huge. However, I need to say it for the record and not assume that, you know, it's taken for granted in what I'm saying. But the opportunity cost outside education is very, very high if you're a poor country. And public finance shows this over and over again. Economics shows it over and over again. There's a number of things you can do by way of direct grants, indirect grants to the poor that can make a major impact on the lives of people. So it is a huge amount of money. The allocation currently of the 1.2 billion is certainly in areas of great need. So I think the budgetary choice, or what finance people would call the allocative decisions, are correct, because they allocated to deal with severe backlogs in infrastructure, without which good quality schooling cannot be conducted. So given all the things I've mentioned, this choice is a sound choice in fiscal policy. However, a choice without delivery doesn't deliver the impact. And I think that's what members are asking. And certainly, we are aware of that, and the performance of expenditure must improve. And we'll speak about that in a moment when I get to it. The Honourable Member raised the issue about books, issue about infrastructure. I'll come to the question of books, but let me say it's important to clarify constantly the difference between workbooks, for which the national department's responsible, and textbooks, for which provinces are responsible, which the DBE only monitors. The Limpopo and the intervention is a different matter, but we'll get to that in a second. So let me repeat that. The DBE is only responsible for workbooks, which we develop ourselves, print through a contract and distribute ourselves to schools. Textbooks are procured by a province from its budget through its service providers and distributed to schools through its service providers. We monitor that process, and Mr. Mwele will speak about our monitoring of that process. Then the technical schools recap and its need there. Mr. Mwele will speak to that. And again, this matter, I remember I was party to the technical team that formulated this proposal before I first left the department way back in 2000, early 2000. And it was in response to a very, very severe need of technical schools. It's a grant, a conditional grant, like other conditional grants that have been created to deal with this problem. The problem being that provinces aren't allocating enough financial resources to what's a national priority. So the conditional grant is created to ensure that. So to that extent, you succeeded in ensuring that that amount is ring-fenced and targeted towards that expenditure. What you can't ensure through a conditional grant is that the actual expenditure will be value for money. And that is the inherent weakness of a conditional grant. The function does not shift to national by virtue of the conditional grant. What national does simply is to hold the money, to ring-fence that money, and to transfer it on conditions defined clearly in DORA. But the money, when you calculate what money is being appropriated globally to a province, that money is assigned to the province. That's why our budget is split to DBA money and provincial money. And what's become clear over the years, and it's cutting across departments, is that this assumption that you can deal with a national priority by ring-fencing an amount in a conditional grant and sending it then to a province with strict conditions defined in DORA helps to the extent that the money is protected and ring-fenced in the budget. But it will not guarantee the delivery of that service. And therefore, we need to look at that. When you get a conditional grant in terms of departmental capacity, DPSA, Treasury, you're not getting the function. The rule in government is money goes with function. So if you don't get the function, you can't develop the personnel and capacity. Your personnel budget stays the same. The conditional grant is largely transacted within your finance section. So again, you don't have that capacity, institutional capacity to deliver it. That's another lesson we're learning, to say we've got to fix it. Now what we've done in the department is to say we cannot on all of these grants simply rely on a transfer conditions, asking the province to give us a business plan, assessing that business plan, and then transferring according to conditions. It's not working. So we've been creating capacity within the department to work with provinces very closely. It's something that's not always welcomed. It's considered to be interference. It's considered to be something where we must leave them alone. Increasingly, provinces are asking for a review of these conditional grants, not because they think those priorities have now receded, but because they believe their budgets are so squeezed now that money, they believe, would be better used elsewhere. So they're asking for a review of whether it is technical schools, even to an extent not extending school nutrition further. So that's the feedback we're getting from provinces. I repeat, not because these things are unimportant, but because they're saying the choices they have to make in a province. They feel the money may be better used, may have a greater impact if it's allocated elsewhere. So that's the issue that's coming up from the provinces. So I just wanted to clarify that issue about the conditional grants and technical schools. Honourable Van Dijk, I did respond to the issue about the cash versus accrual, and then money not spent. not seen as a saving indeed. Unspent is not a saving. And we've never defined it as such. What we do define as a saving is the workbook's one, where we were given 700 million to buy a particular service defined very clearly. We acquired the service within its full specifications for less amount of money. That is the strict definition of a saving, where you procure in accordance with the specification, original specification, at a lower price. And the balance then, Treasury said, yes, you've satisfied us that you've got what we've given you an allocation for, grades 1 to 6, workbooks, in literacy and numeracy. You may therefore use the money for other things. And we then used the money to expand foundation phase. We went on indeed to the senior phase. We also went on into the FET phase for math and science. So that is a saving by any definition of the word. But I also, from the time I was first in the DOE and on my return, emphasized the point that underspending is not a saving, and that underspending requires you to answer in terms of non-performance of that budget that was allocated. And I agree fully with honorable members that when money is allocated to a function, appropriated on a budget, it immediately from day one generates an opportunity cost, because you cannot allocate it elsewhere in the economy, and it crowds out other parts of the economy that could then use that money if it circles in the economy with much greater frequency within a financial year. So I agree with that fully, and money that's appropriated must be spent. What do we do to make sure this trend does not continue? Let me say that on all of these things, there's two reasons why there's this under expenditure. And there's two broad patterns. One category of issues here relates to underlying structural capacity problems that arise largely because these grants are new, linked to capacity and problems. This is not an excuse, I'm just categorizing the reasons. The other one is because these are new things that there were events during the year that were unanticipated, and as a result of that, there was an underspending. And on the latter, it's things like Karigure, where the AG came even after we were audited before, and that approach to procurement was found to be in order. We were suddenly told it's not in order, and therefore you had to stop procuring the service immediately to comply, because it was indeed considered irregular expenditure, which we had to fix up. We then had to reverse completely, and as you know, in terms of the PFMA, you can't procure, continue to procure on that. And that's the reason for that one. In the workbooks case, the 17 million, as I've indicated, it was our design, getting the new books ready in time, something that we didn't anticipate that caused that delay there. The curriculum review, there we gave it to government printers to print. Again, we rely on the agency. They tell us it can be done within certain time frames. It's not done within that time frame, and therefore we cannot pay that within the financial year. But again, coming to what Honorable Van Dijk, I hope I got the name right, said, that we can solve that problem if we take the accounting to be at the point of delivery of the service. The teacher union collaboration one is one where we went to a very innovative approach of partnering with unions. It's the first time it's been done in the history of this country. We believe it's a great success. It has teething problems, and as a result of that, the planned delivery did not go according to schedule, and as a result of that, there was an unspent amount. We believe that's because it was a highly innovative program. It was the first time we were doing it, and the moment you do something with an external partner, and this is not one union, we did it with all the unions, you have these teething problems. So I'm not making an excuse, but I'm saying there is that problem. ENA, the main reason for that is delay is that we moved the date for ENA based on sound pedagogical reasons, and that caused that problem. NIDU, again, the reason was that the NIDU bill was delayed because of consultation. Therefore, the finalization of NIDU as a structure was delayed, and that caused that problem there. I should say, Honorable Chair, institutionally and legally, we regard NEDU as autonomous from the Department of Basic Education. So as DG, I don't interfere there because they are supposed to exercise oversight. It's complicated because up to this point they administratively report to me because they don't exist as an independent entity. So I've got to be quite careful how I steer that ship because you can use your financial and administrative muscle to make entities to which you report very compliant. So I want to be careful not to do that. The NSP EMA grant of 4.3 million, again there, you know, nobody's going to say 4.3 million is not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of money. But the point is, you know, if you're talking billions in school nutrition to finally calibrate it, where you're dealing now with a situation where we've devolved procurement to school level, you're dealing with thousands of schools, thousands of service providers. Some of them become culprits, and you've got to deal with them. So on that basis, there's that amount. Compensation of employees, again, there, that will be explained, and the examiners and moderators will be explained. Honorable Singh, the application for rollover, the CFO will respond to that. And the Honorable Singh was at pains to say that we must take this in a positive light. I know that it's not our place to say whether it's positive or not, but I just want to say that we do indeed take this in a very, very positive light. We believe oversight is important. We believe the feedback is important. And we believe it's in responding to the questions asked here that we can perform our functions better and that we can account better for public finance. It's something we believe in strongly. It's something I believe in very strongly, given my role as DG, but given also my professional responsibilities prior to becoming DG. I worked in the area of public finance. Is it a problem of internal capacity? Honorable Singh asks. Again, Honorable Chairs, this one here is it's not a simple answer to this one. I want to repeat what I said earlier. You can get a conditional grant running into billions. The purpose of that conditional grant is to ensure that that money is ring-fenced so that the province actually spends it for that purpose. But it doesn't mean you get capacity to cover that. So therefore, whether you have internal capacity or not is a question that is still under consideration in the way conditional grants are considered. Originally, when we thought of conditional grants, I say as government, led by Treasury, the understanding was it would be a transfer based on a condition. The conditions in DORA clearly indicated you get a business plan, you just need people who can assess the business plan, it's clear you transfer. It's become clear that that kind of thinking and the capacity you assume you need to implement that is not enough. So we need a rethink. But for us now, given the current situation, you ask for extra human capacity, you're not going to get it. So we're operating on very, very thin human capacity. To a point where, as you assess your functions, you've got to make very important decisions. And sometimes when you stretch an institution too far, you cause it to enter a point of diminishing returns. And we're there now. Let me give you two examples of pressures I'm sitting with as a DG. Currently, I'm sitting with this pressure, saying, what capacity do you have to make sure these grants are actually delivered? Whether it's infrastructure and so forth. I'm sitting simultaneously with another overwhelming pressure that's coming at the moment, which is to say, how do you monitor provinces? You can't simply monitor provinces by getting reports from them. You must go down and actually assess the veracity of the reports, because ultimately you as DG are responsible. Now, at what level of the system do I establish veracity of reports? It can't be at the province, because then they'll rely on written reports. It can't be at the districts, because they'll rely on written reports. It then suggests, in theory, that I then have to have verified information from 27,000 schools. To do that, you need a huge capacity to have that. But we're under serious pressure to do that. I give you but two examples of new pressures that impact on how our department is conceived, which was and still is a policy development department, setting up norms and standards, and monitoring them traditionally from 94 to now, through written reports. So these are things that we really need a rethink on. So I think the question is a very probing question. It's very much something that occupies our minds at this point in time and something for which we've got to respond. It's a question posed by the cabinet itself to all of us, especially concurrent departments. Mm. The cabinet hasn't posed it to us in an accusatory way. They posed it to us to say, look, given what's going on, we need to rethink concurrent departments. Mm. We need to rethink your capacity. And we're taking it in that light. So indeed, Honourable Member, we don't see this in a negative way at all. We think it really helps us to begin to help, to understand what is causing these problems and so forth. Other contractors taking us for a ride. You know, you never know about a market. What I can say, it's not about whether contractors are taking us for a ride or not. Honourable Chairperson, I've said this before. In any market, if you deprive that market of demand, and then suddenly increase demand exponentially, you cause that market to distort. And what you do is move from rock bottom prices to sky high prices. And therefore, when a state operates in a market, it's the responsibility of the state to ensure that your demand that you control is gradual and responsible in a market, so that the supply side has time to respond and develop its capacity. Let me give an example. One of the problems we've got in Eastern Cape is simply a choking of supply of cement, of raw materials, because of the demand being so high. Machinery, the delay, Mr. Pariachi will tell you, we get from DBSA about the school starting, is because there's only few heavy machines in the province to have dealt with the land, which wasn't anticipated. Again, the machines were enough to deal with the normal demand. But the moment we increase demand dramatically, this is what happened. I didn't know that was going to happen. I should have maybe known, which is why I got specialists, DBSA. But it seemed they didn't know either. So again, it's about what we do. And the industry is telling us, can we trust you as government? Because if we can trust you, then we'll invest in equipment. But if we can't trust you, we're not going to buy equipment. We're going to say, yes, we can do it, but we'll move this one heavy piece to that school, and meantime the other sites are waiting. So just to give you one example about, it's not just greed in the market. It's about balancing supply and demand. It's about how a market matures and so forth. But having said that, it still doesn't explain the unusual escalation in prices at certain points. But we believe once the market becomes sane, once our procurement processes are clear and people understand that there's no ways around it, the market will stabilize and we believe we'll get better prices. What has been happening on those chains, we've got innovative companies, including the private sector, coming in and building schools in provinces using local material and so forth at a fraction of the price. And that's beginning to create a good benchmark to private providers. These are private sector, but private providers. Curriculum review, let me just say that item in the expenditure figures is still the original review. It's the CAPS. We haven't done a new review, and it's not an ongoing review. Is just seeing that review through. Remember, the review was done because to streamline the curriculum, and we're implementing it in phases. 2012 is foundation phase and grade 10. 2011 is intermediate and grade 11. And then 2014 is senior and grade 12. So that's how it goes, and that's why that budget item will stay there for that extent. But the minister has made it very, very clear. She does not want a review of the curriculum. Mm. Let me also add, Honourable Chairperson, that Minister Motsekga is not the one that started the review. Mm. She did not do the review. She is implementing the review. She doesn't disagree with the review, but she didn't start the review. Because people say every time there's a new minister, there's a new review. She did not do it. She's implementing it to its full extent. But she's made it clear she does not want the instability for the reasons you've articulated very clearly, Honourable Member. And then our conditional grants, what kind of M&E takes place? I think I've spoken to that and the capacity. Honourable Skosana, strategy to deal with the problem, resignations and how do we deal with this. I think this relates to markets. Mr. Padiachi will speak to that. Honourable Ramatlakane, in terms of the 1.2 and the impact, I've tried to explain that one, but Honourable Member, let me just repeat the point, that the cumulative impact is big, the opportunity cost is big, education expenditure is big. In any country, if education expenditure is not properly used, it crowds out a whole range of things. The reason why it's big is because it's considered an investment. But if you don't get the value for money, it's therefore not an investment. And it crowds out a lot of other things in the economy. That is why other people argue for decreasing expenditure on public education, for the reasons that you then inject more money into the economy. So I fully agree with that, and I don't know how to emphasize it any further. On Limpopo, could we have used the cash there? Let me say to you, Honorable Chair, the way public finance works, you can't, when a province has defaulted so severely, reward them with cash from somewhere. That won't happen. And the Treasury made it clear, correctly so, that there's no bailout. You've got to fix up the reasons why you're in that situation. That's the first thing. But secondly, in terms of DORA and just our intergovernment fiscal relations, when money is allocated for a particular purpose, there must be an act of parliament and so forth to reallocate it. And to reallocate it in terms of intergovernment fiscal relations, you've got to effectively then increase the provincial share by taking money away from other provinces. So it's a big complicated thing to do that, even though in theory that cash was available. What Treasury did at that point in time was to find the money in the province to make it available. Mm. So the issue wasn't about the money availability. Mm. The issue was two principles. One is you can't reward somebody for not managing their finances. That was Treasury's point. That was the first point. And secondly then to say you can't let the children suffer, therefore let's find money to deal with it, which indeed they did. Under expenditure, I've answered that one. The school backlogs and so forth, Mr. Pariachi will respond to that. Let me just give a general comment here to say that we've met with the DBSA, the Minister, Deputy Minister of Basic Education, the Deputy Minister of Treasury, are meeting with the DBSA. We've met the contractors. We've given them an ultimatum. Treasury advised us when we're at a point of wanting to introduce punitive action against contractors to say, if you cancel their contracts, who then takes up this delivery immediately? So we're working with them to fix it up, and Mr. Pariachi will give us an update on where that is. I must go very quickly now. Scarce skills, running short, what about General Eddie? Again, they have spoken about how we're trying to deal with these grants, General Eddie Technical Schools, and with forming capacity. Kari Gure, what was wrong simply was a requirement, a Treasury requirement of procurement, which is to say, even if you appoint an agency, your procurement must still be done by the department. And that was the misunderstanding originally. But otherwise, there was nothing wrong. Honorable Lovemore, COE, compensation of employees, very high in most provincial education departments. Therefore, allocation for techs are suffering. Are we aware of these things? Are we doing something about it? We've got a target. Yes. Yes, it is a problem. And we monitor it quarterly. There's a lady, young lady sitting there. Shouldn't be ages, the lady sitting there. She monitors it with a fine-tooth comb. And we report it at our head combat at the Council of Education Ministers on a regular basis. And we sit with Treasury. All provinces tell us, most provinces that are having problems tell us they didn't get the money for occupation-specific dispensation. We speak to Treasury, they say they've given them the money. So we don't have access to this thing. So we sit in this toing and froing thing. But the problem is not in all provinces. There are some provinces that are a problem. We are projecting that the situation in some provinces can get worse. We're also finding that one of the major factors contributing to this problem is the inability to deal with excess educators, i.e. to fully implement the PPF. Therefore, we've set up a task team from the DBE under the authority of the CEM to deal with this matter systematically province by province. But the moment you go beyond the 85% ceiling, you begin to seriously impact on the quality of schooling in terms of non-personnel resources. The reason for deviation, General Eddie, the CFO will respond. 43 million for moderators, specific figures should respond, although I think there are some specific figures here. EIG, withholding of EIG grant in the fourth quarter, what happens? In terms of DORA, we are told that unless a province complies with conditions, you can't transfer the money. You write to Treasury, inform Treasury you're withholding, and you give the province an opportunity to remediate. Once they've remediated, you transfer the money. our approach is that we can't let the school children suffer. So ultimately, the province can't show capacity to develop proper plans. We work with the province. That's a new thinking we've got now, especially in infrastructure. We deploy our teams to work with them. But that's how our DORA works. Konshana, anyway, the chairs could meet. I'll leave that to the chairs. Honourable Snell.
No, but you can answer for them.
You can answer. Yes.
You know, they say the tenure of public servants is so precarious at the moment.
So you have no answer.
I'm charting a very careful path in everything I do. Honourable Snell, Section 100 and the cost attached to that. It's a very insightful question Honourable Snell is asking. And I have no doubt the AG is going to ask that question when they open my books.
Yes.
But we don't get money for Section 100 interventions. But we must do it. I'm under pressure to do a lot of things. I'm told I must act, I must support the province. But we don't get a single cent. We don't get a single human resource to do it. So you've got to find a way to do it. We get criticized severely about supporting it. Now, in money terms, we have very little budget available, and the implications of that is minuscule in money terms. But let me say it here, and it may come back to bite me by the very committee who questioned me on it, correctly so. I've had to take my personnel, who are fully occupied, which is money, personnel is money, and deploy them to these provinces. So that's how I've taken the resource. It won't be visible in accounting terms, because her salary is still a salary. But the way I use her, if with accounting in that level of detail, about where the resource is actually expended and for what purpose, then it will show up that I'm spending a lot of money in Limpopo. Okay. The question I'll be asked, is there work suffering in other provinces? Yes, no, we are working harder, we're working weekends, we're doing everything we can. It's a situation that's very difficult. No one anticipates Section 101B. So we're managing with the best we can. The Cabinet is looking at regulations now, and I believe from what we hear in the discussion and our reports we presented, is that this matter will be addressed. That when there is Section 100, the intervening minister's department will get some allocation to assist in that process. But that's a very, very insightful question. Now, Eastern Cape, if they have no capacity, surely it's the DBE. Again, that's a complicated question. For the most of this year, for all of this year, and for most of the intervention, the accounting officer has not been the administrator of the Minister of Basic Education. So the accounting officer has been the provincial head of department or acting head of department. And therefore, that situation remains intact. The DBE doesn't have that direct control. Again, to answer that question. Has school gone out on tender yet? Mr. Paliachi will answer that. Next question by Mr. Swartz, he'll answer that one. School nutrition program to explain. Mr. Ndebele will answer that one. And Chair Sogoni, transport, I can answer that. It varies from province to province. The Department of Transport, National, wants all scholar transport to be the responsibility of provincial transport departments. Our CEM and our minister have responded to say no. There are problems when transport handles it in provinces sometimes, because when children are left behind, people come to education. And the criteria looking after children is education. So it becomes a big problem. As far as the media is concerned, it's education. So what we said is that the province must decide, the provincial exco must decide where to resort. So in some provinces it's with education, in some provinces it's with transport. It's not an ideal situation, but that is the case. Honourable Chairperson, I'm sorry for being so long, but with your permission, then if I could ask other colleagues to fill in.
Okay. And
I'll start. Can I?
You have to say.
Ms. Dalele is definitely
okay.
Okay,
can I?
From this week onwards, I'll start with
the CFO, and then once Ms. Dalele is settled.
Leave her alone.
Leave her alone. You want to start? Okay. Does she's ready to start on
I'm ready.
Thank you,
Chairperson. The 35 million underspending in school nutrition is unfortunately due to the late submission of invoices by suppliers. I think the challenge of paying for services rendered does present that challenge of provinces not being able to process the invoices on time. However, all the provinces have been encouraged to apply for rollovers, and over the years, because they have evidence of the invoices, those rollovers have been granted. So it's primarily due to the late submission of invoices.
Can CFO please?
We'll go to...
Thank you, Chair.
We'll go to CFO, but CFO, don't do what Ms. Ndebele does. Speak to us. Don't speak to the person who raised the question. Speak to us here at this side.
We're jealous here in France.
Yeah.
Don't speak to us.
And...
thank you, Honourable Chair. The issue about invoices was raised by a number of members receiving invoices late, but it must also be remembered that sometimes it's the process that forces us to get to that point. For instance, if we're developing curriculum, we have to start with the development consultations and so on. So by the time you start printing, it's later in the financial year, but not because you delayed to start the project. It's the process that leads to that. And then when we receive the invoices, we cannot just pay an invoice on receipt. We have to confirm that the information on the invoice is right. And we have to make sure that we have delivery notes where the goods delivered to the respective areas. Now, that also takes some time. That's why we end up paying the invoices late. So if you get an invoice in the last week of March, it becomes difficult in some cases to process it at the required time. And then on the issue of rollovers, yes, we have applied for rollovers. Of the 1.2 billion, we've applied for 1 billion, 1.072 billion. But the reason we did not apply for the whole amount is because there are certain requirements, you know, that you can request a certain percentage for some of the items, and then we can only request for what you've already spent. So, yes, we have requested the rollovers. And then underspending for the unions, this one DG dealt with, but it's the same as the one I was talking about on the invoices, that we received the invoices, but there were a lot of problems on the invoices, and we tried our best to push them through before the end of the financial year, but that could not happen. And then on the issue of underspending of 43 billion, it's not IQMS the whole amount. Some of the part of the amount, or the bulk of the amount, is for the invoices for the union collaboration, and that's why it's an underspend there. But we already received invoices. And then there was a question of Honourable Skosana about somebody carrying on with the web. With the IQMS, the bulk of the underspending, as I said, or some of the underspending, was for where moderators resigned. Yes, people were continuing with the work, but once somebody resigns, that expenditure cannot happen because the person is not there. But somebody else is doing the work. It's just that you have to fill the position first. So that's why you are showing under expenditure on that item. The Dina Lady one, I think it's Mr. Mweli that has to deal with that one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, Mr. Pagliacci.
Thank you, DJ.
Now let's give Mr. Mweli.
Your committee is very wise, DJ.
Let's give Mr. Mweli.
We can't concentrate on this committee. People are up and down, noisy. Even here on the side.
Well, you're the teacher, you can write the noisemakers.
No, we're not going to write the noisemakers today after now. We are honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to add on what the DG said, indeed the conditional grant in respect of technical high schools is intended to modernize the provisioning in technical high schools so that they are in keeping with providing a sound foundation for scarce skills, as the matter was raised by honorable members. The real intention is to make sure that we refurbish the workshops, we provide modern equipment in these technical high schools, but we also upgrade the skills and knowledge of teachers so that they are in keeping with what is required for modern technology subjects. And this is also linked to the green paper and the white paper on post-schooling as part of creating a sound foundation for that. The challenge is I'm not going to get into them. The DG has adequately addressed them as to, you know, the rethinking of the design of the conditions and also making it possible for us to monitor. But just to add that, indeed, pressure to monitor and get more out of monitoring has placed immense stress on the available and on the available resources, because we have to do it in three ways. As the DG indicated, you can't only rely on written reports. Mm. You now have to go to do on-site monitoring, which we have started doing quite intensely this year. You also have to generate as many reports from the on-site monitoring, present them at HEDCOM, which is a committee of HODs chaired by the DG, but also at CEM. And I can confirm that it has really redefined the nature of the discourse in those important meetings. So that's how we have intensified monitoring. And we are hoping that going forward, particularly from this financial year, things should improve. In respect to the workbooks, I can just say that the DG has really covered what needed to be done. Safe to say that when I was in the Eastern Cape in 2011, when textbooks were not delivered on time, workbooks saved the situation. And then in Limpopo in 2012, when textbooks were not delivered on time, workbooks saved the situation. Foundation phase appreciated the value of workbooks to the extent that in meetings that the minister convened with principals, some principals said we would rather have workbooks and not textbooks. Just keep to the workbooks and then provide us with a teacher's guide and train us on the utilization of workbooks. And therefore, I just want to emphasize the point that in all respects, workbooks were delivered on time. For instance, workbook for Term 3 and Term 4 was delivered in March 2012. The only unfortunate bit is I don't know how to put this, but the reluctance initially from colleagues within line functions in provincial departments and districts to form part of the value chain of monitoring the delivery of workbooks. But I think we have gone beyond that after the last meeting of HEDCOM, where a plan was developed as per the instruction of CEM that provinces and districts must really be involved in making sure that these workbooks are delivered on the right quantities and the right languages. But the appreciation of the value of workbooks is increasing phenomenally every time.
Chairperson, sorry to intervene. For us uneducated, what's the difference between the workbook and the textbook?
Okay.